Okay, it's 7 o'clock, so I'll just say good evening. You will, if you're paying attention, you'll notice that I'm not Linda. I'm Donna, and I'm substituting for her tonight. I know a lot of you. Some of you I've probably seen, but I don't recognize you, but welcome. We are in the Discovering Buddhism, Death and Rebirth module. This is the second of 5 modules, and it's meeting every Monday in August. So we will be finishing on August 30. Just to let you all know, we have also on Wednesday night, we have a visiting teacher, Venerable Robina. She's, if you're not familiar with her, you really should check it out. She's a bit of a firecracker. She's a pretty challenging and exciting teacher to hear from, and she's teaching on how to loosen the grasp of ego grasping so we can get enlightened. So I think that may be all that I am supposed to say before I turn it over to the inestimable Steep.
But Donna, they should register for that, right?
Yeah, you need to register for it to get the Zoom link. So you just go to the calendar for Wednesday nights and look for her event at 7 o'clock on Wednesday nights, and that'll just get you into the Zoom link to register for it.
And tell me again when the first Wednesday is that she's.
We actually started last week.
Okay.
But she'll be continuing through the next 3 Wednesdays. Okay. And it's also, that one was, is also on YouTube, so you can pick up the one that you missed if you head out there.
So can I see by raise of hand anybody who was not here last week, just so I know kind of what to repeat or. Okay, thanks. So we are using this book, and it has different, I don't know if it has different titles, but it has different covers and different editions called Advice on Dying and Living a Better Life by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. I think other people have different covers, but it's for sale. Donna, can people get in the center to buy it, or? Oops, you're muted.
They can definitely get in to buy it on Sunday mornings between 10 and 10:30 and 11:30 and 12, because Susan is definitely there to run the bookstore on Sundays. Other than that, it's pretty patchy. So, yeah, definitely Sunday mornings.
Okay.
Thursday, yeah, Joey's there, and Joey knows how to check people out. So Joey's there on Thursday mornings for the introductory course, which runs from 10 to 11:30.
And obviously you can get it online. Margaret, did you have something?
I was just going to say, I had a little trouble finding it, but I was able to purchase it used off of Thrift Books. I got it for like $6.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. And what I'm doing is, you know, we're following a poem about death and dying that His Holiness is commenting on in the book, because it really covers the entire topic from A to Z. And so what I'm doing is also typing the stanzas out so we can see them together during the class. But before we get into all of that, Donna's going to lead us in a couple prayers. But before I ask her to do that, I just want to help us kind of amp up our motivation. So we talked last week, or I talked, about the importance of, you know, really checking your intention before anything, even before you go to the gym, before you go to work, but certainly before thinking about and contributing to this class. You know, what are your intentions? Because what you put into it really matters. And so one way that we do that in Buddhism is we remind ourselves of the Four Noble Truths, because that helps us generate this wish to change. And there's lots of different ways to do that. You know, the first noble truth is the noble truth of suffering. And that just is helps us remember that you can have a lot of different metaphors, but for example, that we're actually in a prison, because it's such a beautiful prison so much of the time that it's kind of hard to remember that sometimes. And it doesn't mean that we shouldn't enjoy the things that we are lucky enough to have in our prison cell. But if we spend all our time just rearranging our prison cell, we never get out. We just like spend the entire time just rearranging and getting a prison cell with a view, you know, and getting a better bed. And, you know, it's important to use the things that we have and not to deny ourselves those things, but to remind ourselves that, oh yeah, I really want to get out of this prison cell. At some point in my life, you know, in my lives, I would like to get out of this. Another way is to think of, if you had some, you name it, whatever disability or illness, you might still enjoy plenty of things. But if you knew that you could be cured of that illness or disability or whatever it was, that's what you would really want. And if somebody came along and said, you know, I cured myself of that, you can too, you would be, you know, you would be riveted to that information. And that's the kind of feeling that we're trying to generate, this understanding that, oh, I have this thing, this illness, this, and people have cured themselves, or I'm in this prison and somebody has escaped. You know, so when we're taking refuge as Buddhists in the Buddha, it's not just a person, it's the pathway out. You know, it gives us hope that somebody escaped prison and is showing us the trail out. So just important to read. That's why we start with prayers. And in the beginning, I remember being really confused, like, why are we doing prayers? And then I heard this one teacher say this thing that really changed my view of it all. He said, the point of prayer is so that your mind and the prayer become the same thing. That's the whole point. So keep that in mind as Donna leads us through this. And, you know, since you're muted, you can say the prayer out loud, which is helpful to hear, you know, Donna saying it as well as yourself say it out loud. And Donna, turn it over to you.
Okie doke. So let's start with the Shakyamuni Buddha mantra. Tayata Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha Tayata Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha Tayata And the Medicine Buddha stanza and mantra. I'll go on with equal compassion for all, whose name when merely heard dispels the suffering of the lower realms. Dispeller of disease and the three poisons, I prostrate to Medicine Buddha Lapis Light. Te ata om bekamse, bekamse, maha bekamse, bekamse, raja samud gate soha. Te ata om bekamse, bekamse, maha bekamse, bekamse, raja samud gate soha. Te ata om bekamse, bekamse, maha bekamse, bekamse, raja samud gate soha. Te ata om bekamse, bekamse, maha bekamse, bekamse, raja samud gate soha. Te ata om bekamse, bekamse, maha bekamse, bekamse, raja samud gate soha. Te ata om bekamse, bekamse, maha bekamse, bekamse, raja samud gate soha. Te ata om bekamse, bekamse, maha bekamse, bekamse, raja samud gate soha. Now, refuge in bodhicitta, I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. To my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. To my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. Through my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. Now the Four Immeasurables. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. And the short mandala offering. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Nirya Chayami. And 10 raising verse of praise. Not veiled by any fault, white in color, whose head a perfect Buddha crowns in light. Gazing compassionately at all beings, Kyu Chen Rezik, all-seeing one, I prostrate. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. And the green Tara, verse of praise and mantra. Tara liberates from psychic existence. Tutara liberates from the eight fears. Ture liberates from all sickness. I prostrate to the liberator, Mother Tara. Om Tari Tu Tari Ture Soha. 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 Om Tari Tu Tari Ture Soha.
Okay, I want to start with addressing some questions that came in the chat last time before we move on with the prayer and the stages of dying that we're eventually going to be discussing. So let me know if you can't hear me or if anything is glitchy. You can also always add into the chat. Donna will check it out and send me a note. So a couple of people were asking some questions about reincarnation and how that idea developed, how the Buddha developed that idea, and so on. So, you know, the Buddha was born into a Hindu family who already believed in reincarnation. So the historical Buddha came into that family. That family already believed in reincarnation. But it's important for us to likewise make sure we really understand and analyze it rather than just accepting it. Also, once we're completely enlightened, it's said that we will then remember all of our past lives, the whole stream leading up to to our enlightenment. So that could also answer that question of how the Buddha came to know and understand about reincarnation. But there's ways, even in my limited view, that I can analyze if reincarnation is true or not. And so don't take anything, you know, blindly or from me or from anybody else. I encourage you to really do some deep analysis to see, does this make sense? Is this accurate? And so one of the kind of an analogy that I came up with that helps me is if I, you know, I lived in New York for like 10 years, and there's places in New York where you can stand between the canyons of buildings and look out and see a river. But you're only seeing like a little square of that river. And if you didn't know better, if you weren't an adult who had seen rivers, you might think, oh, that's just a little lake, or that's just a little square of water at the end of this street. But if you watched and you analyzed and you spent some time watching that river or that piece of water, you might notice a sailboat come in all of a sudden, move through, and then disappear at the beginning of the next building. You might notice that the water is actually moving in one direction, not in the other direction. You might notice several things like that that might then give you the idea that, you know, I bet this isn't stagnant water. I bet it's not a lake. Something is moving there. And then if you got in an elevator in one of those buildings and went to the very top, you would see, you would have a much bigger picture view than your limited view down on the street. And you would see, ah, I was right. That is a river. So similarly, in our lives, we're stuck in this little view. And there are things, though, that we can analyze about our view and our life that start to help us see it's more than just this. If you start to feel that and analyze it for yourself, then it becomes an unshakable belief. And rather than just something that somebody told you that kind of makes sense, or is kind of romantic or interesting, or I want to be a princess in my next life or something like that, it gives you an idea of the whole stream of consciousness that at this moment, you're the keeper of the river, right? And so lifetimes before, the keeper of those rivers put things into that river that now you have to either clean up. Well, I'm sure there's plenty to clean up in the river, and there's also things you can add in. So, you know, if it's St. Patrick's Day and somebody puts green dye in the river, the whole river turns green for a while. And if somebody dumps a lot of crap in the river, people downstream are affected. So right now, the whole point of understanding reincarnation is to know that, to actually, and this is what I said last week a lot, that every single thing that we learn in Buddhism is meant to empower you. And if it's not empowering you, it means that you need to kind of rejigger the way that you're looking at it, because that's what it's meant to do. It's not meant to be used to look at somebody else and say, oh, I bet they did this in their past life. That's not the point at all. Or to look at yourself and do that. It's to empower you, because now the whole point is that you are the keeper of your river right now. So right now, there's so many things you can do to clean up that river and put the things that you want in that river, because you're the beneficiary of the next corner of that river. So likewise, when we're taking refuge, or whatever you take refuge in, it's also your future self. So I remember asking Geshe-la this when I was first studying Buddhism, is, you know, I was saying these prayers, and as you can tell, I'm kind of stubborn. I have all these questions, and everything has to make sense before I can really go with the program, right? So, you know, I was thinking about this whole thing, and I was like, oh, so actually, like when I'm prostrating to the altar, and I'm putting offerings on the altar and taking refuge in the Buddha, I'm taking refuge in my future Buddha self. He said, that's not wrong, which I took as meaning that's right. So you are building your pathway out of this prison constantly, step by step, or you're not, or you're digging a hole and staying there. But that's the choice that is yours. And that's why this is meant to be empowering, to understand reincarnation. That some things that we put into the river don't ripen necessarily in this lifetime. Some things we can see immediately ripen, right? It's no surprise. You go to the gym and start doing some exercises that you want to do, and, you know, you see some progress. You start learning how to speak Spanish. I'm trying to learn some Spanish, and, you know, I see a little bit of progress, slowly but surely. So these things we can see, and those are just really simple examples. But also, if you've been discovering Buddhism, if you took what are some of the first modules on mind, you know, mind and its nature, then you understand that the nature of mind is more than, quote, the brain, right? So the brain is something the mind uses, but the mind's nature is clarity. And, you know, very common metaphor is this, like, sky. So the sky it has clouds sometimes. It doesn't mean that the sky isn't there. So the sky-like nature of the mind is what we're trying to tap into and recall and promote and protect and remember when there's a lot of clouds. So I'm going to lead us, we always start with a little meditation, so I'm going to lead us through a 5-minute just relaxation meditation and then put our focus on the idea of reincarnation. So if you're kind of new to DB, one of the things to know about meditation is they're generally, no matter what kind that you're reading about or hearing about and all kinds of different options, there's basically fall into 2 categories. So one is focus meditation, where you're developing that muscle of your mind to focus on something and not follow all the different things that come into your mind, all the different feelings and distractions. So you're developing that muscle to stay focused. And then the other kind of meditation is analytical. And eventually we're trying to join those so that you're developing this muscle to stay focused and you can develop perfect single point of concentration on something, on a topic, like on impermanence or emptiness, whatever you choose. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to just do a really little mini sample of that by getting into a comfortable position. We went over last week, I think. So if you're sitting in a chair, sit as straight as you possibly can. The whole point of the whole posture is that your back is as straight as possible so that the vertebrae are like coins or stones stacked on top of each other so that that flow of energy is unbroken. And if you put your hand on the back of your neck, you'll see, you know, your head is on top of that. So you, if you put your head up, you're breaking that flow. So you want to tuck your chin down just a little bit so that your neck is not breaking that flow of energy from your stacked coins of your spine. That's the main thing. Then, you know, if you have your feet on the floor, if you're sitting in a chair, that's helpful. Your arms away from your body so that your breathing can be nice and deep. The hand mudra for meditation is, you know, you have your, all the pictures you see of the Buddha, you know, his hands, right hand on and gently on top of the left hand, thumbs just gently together as though you're holding a piece of paper, a little cup. Put that down at your navel area. Put your tongue at the back of your front teeth so that your jaw is relaxed. Your eyes are either closed or gently opened. And then you put all of your awareness on your breath. Your breath is like the post that you're going to keep, that you're tying your mind to so that it doesn't wander everywhere. And it will, but you just keep bringing it back. And each time you bring it back to your breath, you celebrate that you saw that it traveled and you're bringing it back without judgment, without being harsh. And to help, you can count each inhale to the next exhale is 1. Next inhale and exhale is 2. So you count up to 10 or 5 or whatever works best for you. Again, just put all of your concentration on your breath, exhaling all the tension, stress, thoughts, fatigue. Each exhale, let them slip out of you. Each inhale, bring in fresh, clear light. Doing that for a few minutes and then I will walk us through a meditation. And now with a relaxed, alert mind, take a look at your present state of mind, the thoughts and sensations coming through you. Just observe them in a detached way, without judgment. Just notice your mind. Can you get a feeling of your mind separate from the thoughts? Kind of like the ocean separate from the waves. Can you feel your mind, the power of your mind? Briefly skim over the experiences you've had since waking up this morning. Are these part of the same stream of consciousness as your present experience? Can you see how they led you to this moment? And pick one thing, one idea, one opinion, one concept or theme. It could be as simple as your interest in Buddhism. It could be your dream that you've had, a goal that you've had, the work that you do. Just pick one thing. One concept, and notice how you feel about it right now, in the present moment. And then go back in time, little bit by little bit. What was your feeling about this same topic last month? Go back a little bit further to last year. Can you keep tracing it back like that? Year by year, even perhaps before you were aware, what was it before? What led to it? Try to go back as far as you possibly can in your memory. Avoid getting involved in any of the recollections. Just watch as though you're watching a river. Then having reached back as far as you possibly can, gently come back to the present. And imagine your mind moving forward with this same concept or idea. For the rest of the day, tomorrow, the coming weeks and years until death. And what happens then? as the stream of consciousness with that thought, that idea, suddenly cease? Does it transform? Does it continue? Just let these questions and thoughts arise and float. And then slowly open your eyes. I'm going to ask Donna to help me put you all in groups to discuss this. Just it'll be short, and we'll come back to the larger group. But before we do that, is there any question about that meditation or comment from anybody? So what I want you to do in the breakout rooms is to talk a little bit about that and your ideas of stream of consciousness, the continuity of consciousness, anything that has helped you or that you're struggling with about that. And also the homework from last week was to talk about, and to think about things in your daily life that are kind of like small experiences of letting go that we can practice with as we practice this topic of death and letting go. So we were to try to find some things that would help us in our daily life. So if you found any, that would be the time to share it in a small group. If not, we can talk later. Okay, so are the instructions clear? Just talk a little bit about your experience with that meditation, what your thoughts are about reincarnation, stream of consciousness, the continuity of consciousness, if that exists or not, how you, if you have felt it to be true, how does that ring true for you? How did you do that? You know, I've talked a little bit about my experiences. What about for you? So we'll try to, you know, there's not a whole lot of time. So try to go around your group pretty quickly. I think we'll be in like groups of four, three or four. Introduce yourself and then everybody just spend a couple minutes answering that first question. And then if there's time, go around and do the homework as well. Okay. So Donna, you know how to do breakout rooms? You should see something at the bottom that says breakout rooms. Maybe I can do it.
Oh, I see it. I see it. Okay.
So you want to assign manually because you don't want to put me or you in there, okay?
Okay.
Just click it and move people.
And then we have, so there'd be 15 people, so that would be how many breakout rooms?
Well, you can just, 15 is going to be like, say put in five rooms.
Okay.
Are you counting you and me? So it's 13.
No, it's 15 without you and me.
All right. So yeah, create five and put three in.
Okay.
And we'll send you a message when you're about halfway through, and then we'll be back in this room. Don't get dizzy. Is it working?
Looks like it.
Yeah.
Oh, so we can hear each other and they can't hear us. Is that right?
That should be the way it works.
Yeah.
Did you put Jennifer in a room? Well, she hasn't joined.
She's.
You can move her. I'll move her to room three. Right?
Yeah, she's in room three, but she didn't join it for some reason.
She might not be on the she might not be on the call anymore. She might have run to the restroom or something. Alrighty. So I like to get people. It's such a hard Zoom is such a weird thing. You know, that I like to have people go at least to be able to chat with each other. And in the past, it's worked pretty well. What do you think?
I'm sorry, I was looking because it looked like there was a message about breakout rooms, but I think not. So what do I think?
Yeah, I mean, I think people tend to like the breakout rooms. We'll see with this group. It's so hard to read an audience on Zoom.
Ugh. Yeah.
It's really, really hard.
Well, it's nice that there's small breakout rooms.
Yeah. Well, hopefully people will share that. And then I was going to be like zooming through this book, but when I got the chat from Linda, there were several people who were, you know, I was like, oh, I can't go moving through in this direction if people are still have questions about reincarnation. So it's always a toss up. I talked to Geshe-la about that dilemma. It's like, yeah, it's hard. But, you know, I don't want to lose people who are really have this question about reincarnation and get into this complicated thing about death dissolution states. They're wondering, why the hell am I doing that?
Yeah.
It never hurts to think about reincarnation. Hey, did you ever do mediation?
Wednesday we're going to do it.
This coming Wednesday?
Yeah.
With my friend Kathy?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
I think you'll like her. She's really good.
Yeah. Well, I did talk with her on the phone. Both of us have already, you know, talked with her on the phone back in June when we were first contemplating this. So,
yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it should be, I'm looking forward to it. I've been taking notes and about what I want to say and how I want to say it. So my conversation with you recently was helpful. So
that's good. Did she have any like tips for the conversation?
I don't think I asked her. Yeah.
She'll guide you all through it. And
yeah.
You can at any point if you could say in the beginning to your sister too.
You know what? We have to be careful. We're still streaming on YouTube probably.
Thank you. God, okay, I'm gonna get something to drink. Thank you for reminding me of that.
Well,
hey, Jill,
maybe we can talk about it offline between now and Wednesday if you have time. You probably don't.
Maybe tomorrow. Yeah, maybe tomorrow. Okay, yeah, I gotta pay attention to the time. Can you broadcast that this should be at least halfway done?
Okay.
See, when we're live in class, I can hear what people are saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I feel bad for the people on YouTube because they don't get to have a discussion.
Well, the same is true when I do it live in person.
Yeah, that's true.
Just part of it. You can still think about these same things, but I try to summarize it when we all come back together. That's why we don't do it. We don't stay there too long. But it's hard to have a group discussion on Zoom. It's really hard. All right, let's close out those rooms.
Okay. Do we give them a warning that we're closing them, or do we just close them?
It gives them a minute. When you hit close, it gives them a minute.
Okay.
I do this all day long. I am very used to this format.
Well, I'm learning more and more new Zoom tools. I'd never used breakout rooms before, and it was pretty easy.
We have simultaneous interpreting tools, too, that we use at my job, and, all kinds of stuff. Sometimes, in the middle of the pandemic, I was craving 3D people so much.
Yeah.
I would just go sit in a parking lot and look at people. I did a couple of times.
Yeah.
Or I would come take Uma out for a walk because at least it was something alive I could touch.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't want to go back into that, but
I know.
Yeah. All right, well, I see some smiles, so it must not have been terrible. Yay. All right. Yay, you know, when we're doing this at the center, I get to hear what people are saying. I get to tell if it's a complete failure or if it's working, and some of the chatter I can comment on. But so can anybody give me a little summary of what anything that you all said? Because there's also people on YouTube, we think, who would probably benefit from hearing some little summary maybe from anybody who wants to just unmute yourself and anything that you learned in that group, anything that was helpful or funny. Okay, now you're going to have to slow down. I can't hear everybody at once. So.
Oh, no, everybody's on mute, I guess. The time was not extensive. So by the time we said who we are and what we're thinking right now, we couldn't get into the letting go and stuff. But it seemed we focused on talking about acceptance of the whole concept of rebirth and the basis for it. Others are more strongly feeling it makes logical sense for them and it's not a big deal. Others, including myself, I just don't understand how the enlightenment of the experiences of Buddha could have led to this whole thing. So I just don't understand how or why it even fits into the big picture of, because I still look at Buddhism as a general philosophy of living life to end suffering. So it just, those are the things we all kicked around.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Yeah.
Sure. We talked a little bit about what Gary was touching on, or at least I did a little bit. The way that I had internalized rebirth and also karma as it's related to that is that the way I internalized that was it allows us to not spend time and effort talking about blame and responsibility of the circumstances that are happening in our lives right now. There's good and bad that has happened in past lives. And we own all of it. We own all of our past lives and our past mistakes. And so the idea of rebirth kind of frees you from putting effort into blaming someone else and blaming something else and stops the kind of the victim game and kind of gives you the ability to say, look, this is happening and it's on me. And it, you know, now my efforts need to be towards fixing this life, living this life to the best of my ability, and not putting effort into, well, it's not my fault, it's somebody else's fault. It just kind of helps you to move forward.
Yeah, that's certainly a very empowering message that you just gave, you know, that this is on, I'm the keeper of the river. It's on me to do whatever I can at this point. And going back and trying to untangle the whole knot is not really, it's kind of a waste of time when you could actually do other things to untangle it. I think one of the because Gary, you were saying kind of like, I'm not sure why this, how this fits. That should be a really good question for Venerable Rabina. But also I think the point is to think about beginninglessness. And even if we're not thinking necessarily about our life, if that's kind of an overwhelming thing, when we think about the universe, or we just think about this day, where did this day come from? Well, it didn't come out of nothing, right? We all understand that there was a yesterday and the earth turned and now there's a today. And, you know, that we have no problem with. We might not agree on like how the earth started, but we can see that one day leads to another, easy peasy, that this day didn't just pop out of nothing. And it's that popping out of nothing that we're kind of challenging ourselves to think about. Things don't just come from nothing. I heard somebody actually say that to Venerable Rabina when they were challenging the idea of reincarnation, and her point was like, that's right. Things don't just pop out of nothing. And I've heard the Dalai Lama say he has no problem with the idea of the Big Bang, but probably there are many, many Big Bangs, in fact, infinite Big Bangs, because how could there be just nothing and then something? So it's that idea that we're kind of playing with, and this idea of the stream of consciousness, which is ultimately meant to be an empowering message. And but even if you don't have to believe in reincarnation to get the benefits of Buddhist philosophy. So that's for sure. Because, you know, you can consider each day a new incarnation, and each day is built on what happened the day before. And so then if we're just even looking at this lifetime, what can you do to be as empowered and wise and compassionate in this lifetime? And we've all seen people who kind of misuse these ideas in various ways. We just want to use it so that it's as beneficial to ourselves and others as possible. But I wanted to just bring that up since that there have been several comments about that. And since a lot of what we're going to be doing, what the poem focuses on, is the pivotal moment at the time of death, since Buddhists believe that the consciousness doesn't just end. And so the moment of death is like this launching pad. And we can practice now so that that launching pad is as positive as possible, regardless of the circumstances of our death. As I told you, that's what got me into Buddhism in the first place, was I wanted to be able to work with my mind regardless of whether my death was violent or not, or peaceful, or from illness, whatever the cause. I wanted to be able to have as peaceful a mind as possible. And so there's lots of ways that we can practice throughout our day with just that. You know, we talked about kind of questioning if this is a dream or not. But also all the things that we have to say goodbye to. We're going to get into the poem in a minute. That's one of the points, is to certainly we shouldn't just deny our emotions. We can be sad. There's nothing wrong with being sad of saying goodbye. But as the poem describes, this kind of lustful or forlorn grasping onto what we are having to leave does not help our mind at that moment, and also does not help whoever we're leaving. So to be able to develop some equanimity around leaving helps us then with that ultimate leaving. And again, the whole point of being able to practice some of the death dissolution meditations and practice our mind at the moment of death is, from a Buddhist perspective, it launches us forward, right? We're in this what they call the city of erroneous concepts, and now we're going to leave. So if you want to be empowered as to what happens next, practicing the mind at the moment of death is the best way to do that. So I'm going to share my screen and bring up the poem again. I don't know if I'm doing this right. Can you see it? Okay, good. All right, so just briefly, I'm going to go over the first stanzas, because if you have this book, and last week I mentioned that this poem was written by the first Panchen Lama, and the first book, the poem is divided so that the first, like, seven stanzas really just explain how to approach dying. You know, what are the benefits? Remember, in Buddhism, most of the meditations are, the traditional meditations are about, like, the advantages of doing this and the disadvantages of not doing something. And so similarly, it talks in the book a lot about the advantages of recalling death and preparing and the disadvantages of not. So the first stanzas talk about the approach. And then we did at least four, I think, last week. And then we get into about the proper perspective. So that's what we're going to focus on today, is the proper perspective that can handle kind of the overwhelming experiences at the moment of death. And then next week, we'll start to get into the actual stages of dying and different signs and different things that you can be aware of what are the stages of dying. So I had memorized the stages of dying and do this death dissolution meditation well before I was so intimately involved in watching somebody's death. And it helped me enormously because my mom, I was her main caregiver, and she died over the course of 4 days, and I got to see each stage in exquisite detail. But I could see, I mean, it was taking her, some people it'll take 2 seconds, some people it'll take quite a while, but I could see exactly what was happening. And practice it that way. It helped me, because some of you said that one of the reasons you want to take this class is so that you can comfort people. And that's, I found it a great comfort to kind of understand where she was in that journey and what she needed along the way. All right, so the first stanza is always going to be, you know, going for refuge. So I and all beings throughout space and without exception go for refuge until enlightenment to the past, present, and future Buddhas, the doctrine and spiritual community, may we be released from the frights of this life, the intermediate state, and the next. So the intermediate state is the bardo, or other religions call it something else, but it's between lives, right? Stanza two, may we extract the meaningful essence of this life support without being distracted by the senseless affairs of this life. Since this good foundation, hard to gain and easy to disintegrate, presents an opportunity of choice between profit and loss, comfort and misery. We talked last week about, you know, the senseless affairs of this life don't mean, some people take that to an extreme and think it means everything, going to work, having kids. It doesn't mean that. It's what you put into those affairs that make it senseless or meaningful. So, Lamasova Rinpoche has talked quite a bit about doing something with bodhicitta. So if you're a hairdresser, you can take care of other people's hair and make them look beautiful and talk to them with bodhicitta. That would turn something that might seem senseless into something that's incredibly powerful. All right, and so this life support is this life, this body. Stanza three, may we realize that there is no time to waste, death being definite, but the time of death indefinite. What is gathered will separate, what is accumulated will be consumed without residue. At the end of arising comes a descent, the finality of birth is death. So that's, you know, we talked about how everything that comes together, our body, our life, is an accumulation of aggregates that then allows us to label it whatever your name is. And as these aggregates dissolve, then there's no longer a base for the label of you. And everything that comes together, whether it's this class or this year or whatever it is, anything that comes together and as aggregates will fall apart. And so there's lots of ways that we can practice these states. Stanza four, may we be relieved from over, I think we did this one too, right? Did we do this one last week? Let's see. Oh, okay. Yeah, we did. Sorry. May we be relieved from overwhelming suffering due to the various causes of death. When in the city of erroneous conceptions of subject and object, the illusory body composed of the four impure elements and consciousness are about to separate. That's new, right? Does anybody remember?
That's new.
It's not new. We did it last week.
It is new. It's new for me.
Okay. That's what I thought. So, I'd want to just read something to you about that in case you don't have the book. Now is the time to practice so that with the force of familiarity, we will have a different kind of attitude. The body is what they're calling the city of misconceptions. To view this body or this life as though it was a city, because though it appears to be clean when you wash it, as well as a source of bliss, permanent and under your control, it is not. It is produced from earth, water, fire, and wind, is subject to pain, and changes from moment to moment of its own accord. People and things appear to exist under their own power, and ignorance accepts this false appearance, giving rise to afflictive emotions. These afflictive emotions in turn pollute our actions of body, speech, and mind, and this perpetuates the cycle of existence. So understand that you live in a city of misconceptions, or, you know, a prison. In other words, it's a big city. It's beautiful. There's lots of wonderful things to do. But don't you want to get, you know, if you knew what was beyond that city, you'd be spending so much of your time trying to get out of the city. So that's what this is a lot of what this is about, this stanza is about. And there's a lot in the book, too, about there's different types of suffering at the time of death. And understanding that the practice we do now will relieve the different kinds of suffering at the time of death. Because we can't, as I was so well aware of, we can't control how you're going to die. But if we can practice with our mind, then the suffering at that moment can be lessened. Stanza 5. Maybe be relieved from mistaken appearances of non-virtue when deceived at the time of need by this body sustained so dearly. The frightful enemies, the lords of death, manifest, and we kill ourselves with the weapons of the three poisons of lust, hatred, and bewilderment. So one of the points they're making is we spend so much time on this body, so much time, you know, putting lotion on it and, you know, everything that we do, which, again, is not a negative thing, but that ultimately the body, we may even feel that the body is betraying us as we age, as we get sick. And certainly when we're dying, the body can do nothing to help us. And that's what it means by when deceived at the time of need by this body, the frightful enemies, which, with practice, don't have to be so frightful. Understand that this body will desert you, will someday desert you. Avoid lusting after the situations you are leaving. Avoid hating that you are leaving. Keeping away from the poisonous mind state as much as you can so that you can maintain virtuous practice while dying. And then, we kill ourselves with the weapons of these three poisons, meaning that these weapons, especially at the time of death, if these are in our mind state, this has the potential to really misdirect where we want to go, keep us locked into that city. And it takes a lot of practice to not have those arise in your mind. So for those of you who didn't hear me last week, I was saying that I was very concerned that that if I died a violent death, that I didn't want to have so much fear. And then I remembered when I was younger, I had read the autobiography of Mahatma Gandhi, who had practiced for much of his life to be able to say the Hindu word for God at the moment of his death. That was his great wish. And how did he die? By being murdered. When he was assassinated, he saw it coming, and he was able to say this word and die. So it was proof that you could do that with practice. You could have a mind state that would allow you to be less fearful of what was coming, you know, because we don't get a trailer for this movie that we're about to be involved in. There's no coming attractions except the ones that we start creating, which is the whole point of the death dissolution practice, which we'll be doing, is so that you can start to have the trailer in your mind and recognize the signs and be as calm as possible, which we will definitely get to in this class. So stanza 6, may we remember the instructions for practice. When doctors forsake us and rights are of no avail, oh, there's a lot of typos in here. Friends have given up hope for our life and we are left with nothing else to do. So again, the first part of the poem is really just really encouraging us, giving us lots of reasons for why to practice the second part of the poem, which is a way to remember the stages of dying. That's what it means, maybe remember the instructions for practice. Because otherwise, I mean, if you're able to survive, yeah, let the doctors help you, let your friends help you, but when nothing else can help you, this practice can help you. So any thoughts about what we've covered so far? Does it sound helpful or frightening? It's definitely dramatic, but it's meant to catch your attention. And
this is Janet. It might sound a little bit of both, a little bit helpful and a little bit frightening. But I'm finding it useful. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, and you know, the first part is always to kind of, it is meant to kind of like splash some cold water in your face, and that the next part is the actual practice, so that those frightful enemies that he's describing don't arise, you know, that there is something to do. And so I used to have been practicing doing the death dissolution as I fall asleep, you know, trying to remember the different stages of dying, because you know how our minds are when we're dreaming, you know, and you can incorporate a sound into a dream, right? So there's some noise in your bedroom. You might incorporate that into a dream. Your mind is the one that then is taking that sound and making it something bad or good. Have we all had that experience? You know, you hear something in your room, rustling or noise or something, it might become a nightmare in your dream, or it might become something really great. That's completely up to you. Now, I didn't see this movie, but somebody, I was explaining something like this to them, and they said, oh, that's just like that movie where, maybe some of you have seen it, somebody's like in a space capsule and there's some little noise that's really bugging the hell out of them because they can't get away from it, and they're in a space capsule forever. And then she realized, oh, I have to make this something I love. And so she worked really hard to make this little ticking sound or whatever it was, something she loved. And because it's completely up to you. You know, she was focusing entirely on, I can't escape this sound. You know, this is going to drive me bonkers. I'm stuck in this capsule with this little ticking sound. It's going to drive me crazy. But if you could turn that into, if you could just switch it around, like, why isn't that the sound of like the person I love the most in the world, right? It's completely up to you. So I've told this story before, but it's, I was in the early stages of practicing all this, and I was in a situation where I was getting really annoyed, and I remembered, oh, wait, I'm supposed to practice, right? I'm really annoyed. And my annoyance was I don't like crowds, and it was this really crowded airport. I was waiting for my mother to come off the plane, and it was summer. It was hot. I think it was in Newark. And everybody who came off the plane was not her. And I was like, and all of a sudden, I remember, wait a minute, I'm supposed to practice. So the next person that came off, instead of being like annoyed that it wasn't my mom, I thought, what if that was like the person I love so much in the world? Then everything about them would be so cute. You know, it wouldn't be like, oh, it's not her. The fact that they were whatever, gawky or whatever their looks were, I wouldn't be disappointed. I'd just be like, oh, everything about them is just adorable. And so I kept doing that. And by like the 10th person, it started to actually work. I actually could feel what it would be like if that was my favorite aunt or uncle or whoever coming off the plane, somebody I hadn't seen for years. And by the everything changed. I felt like I was in the, one of those movies, like the whole entire airport changed. You know, there was a swell of cello music practically. Everything was just calm. By the time my mom got off, I felt up towards her like I did to everybody who just gotten off in front of her. It was such a profound experience for me that I really understood the power of my own mind. And if I catch it early enough to apply the antidote, then it doesn't feel, then it feels real. I can really do something. If I wait too long, then I have to do something else, like take a walk or something. But it's not to deny how I feel, but it's to try to, can I expand and shift and apply an antidote? So like that, the whole point of this practice that we're going to be doing is so that we can generate a different kind of view when the signs of our own dying are in front of us. I know somebody who'd been practicing this a while, Donna Shanti's mom, and she knew, I mean, she had like a year, she was in hospice, and she was so anxious and so ready. And she's like, why aren't I dying sooner? I'm really ready to go. And when she was in the stages of dying, Geshe and I visit her as she was just kind of entering into it. And, or I mean, her family was there, and they said she kept opening her eyes saying, it's beautiful, it's beautiful. And then closing her eyes again. So she was having that experience, not the frightful Lords of Death experience, because she had been practicing. She was looking forward to these same things that were arising for her were things that she was welcoming. So just like that ticking sound had become something that this person was loving. So that's my little speech for this evening. Why don't we spend some moments now dedicating the merit that we've created by coming together, forming this class, sharing ideas with each other, being patient with me, my typos and my excessive talking, and think of all the merit that you've created by thinking about this topic, even for a moment thinking about this topic of how to move towards enlightenment, how to free yourself and others, how to use every moment, including the moment of your death, to become free of this gorgeous prison that you find yourself in. So imagine that this merit is a handful of seeds, and now you decide where they're going to be planted. If you don't dedicate them, they're just scattered to the wind. They'll definitely grow, but this time you have a chance, you have the opportunity to direct where they're going to be planted. And I highly suggest you plant them in the direction of your future enlightenment. May all the obstacles between you and that state be obliterated so that you may achieve enlightenment for yourself and the sake of all others quickly. Thank you all for attending, and we'll see you same place next week. And I encourage you to check out Venerable Rubina. And if you have any questions, I guess you can put them in the chat, or I don't know. I can give you my email right now so that you can have it, and you can send me a question. I will do my best to get an answer for you. My email is steep, like a steep hill, S-T-E-E-P, Smith, steepsmith@gmail.com. And I might not get your question back to you immediately. It's steep, S-T-E-E-P, Smith, steepsmith@gmail.com.
I have a question that's a little off topic. Do you guys know when Meditation 101 will be coming back around?
Donna?
That'll be this fall, but we don't have it scheduled yet. Probably October or November, depending on whether meditation or Buddhism in a nutshell goes first. And that'll be in the evening.
Okay, and at least one person asked me, you know, that they would like to have a really solid practice by the end of this class, and I would suggest you get in touch with me. I'm happy to set up an appointment for you to talk to Geshe-la about exactly how to design like a daily practice for you. He would be probably the best person to ask. But some of the prayers that we do now, these are like bookends on your day or on your practice or on your meditation to set your intentions, say some prayers, and at the end dedicate the merit. So that's a quick answer to that, but feel free to use that email, and if you want an appointment with Geshe-la, I'm happy to try to set that up. Okay. All righty. Thank you, everybody. Thanks,
Donna. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Good night,
Thank
all.
You, Donna. Good night.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Donna.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Donna.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Donna.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.